Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. The set looks a bit different because we are attending the International Social Wellbeing Conference 2023 organized by EPF and their partners here at Mandarin Oriental Kuala Lumpur. At this conference, we're going to be talking about a whole host of issues, but most importantly, we're talking about social protection and social well-being, particularly for those that might be vulnerable. Early on, we've heard some speeches, especially from the EPF CEO, but throughout the 2 days, we're going to have a lot more conferences and a lot more speeches from luminaries of this industry. But that's not what this interview is all about. My interview right now is with Yulian Chen of B Alternatives. They're a private equity fund dealing in secondaries. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us, Yulian. Let's do a little bit of background in terms of what secondary investment is all about before we jump into what B Alternative does.
Yeah, sure. First of all, really, just thanks for having me. So just a quick self-introduction. I'm Yulian Chen, one of the founding partner of B Alternatives. So what B Alternatives is actually doing in Southeast Asia market, we're, just like you mentioned, we're private equity secondaries. I think a lot of people might have a question, what is private equity secondaries, right? So, but before that, just a quick, myself, actually, I came to Malaysia in 2021 with my co-founder, two Japanese. Before that, we've been doing private equity secondaries for a long time in Japan. So this company, B Alternatives, is a, I would say, independent GP from one of the biggest Japanese private equity firm back in 2021. So now we're based in Malaysia. We're having more than 10 members. Most of them are local Malaysian. We're doing global investment, but main focus is Asian market.
Why did you choose Kuala Lumpur instead of, let's say, Singapore, where most PE funds are based out of?
Yeah, we're actually just, you know, frequently being asked why choose Malaysia. I think, you know, at the moment, myself and my co-founders, we saw the strong growth of Southeast Asia private market. So we're thinking, okay, then why not we just move ourselves from Japan to Southeast Asia? And then why Malaysia? I think just very simply, we're actually registered ourselves in Lab 1. So we have tax incentive. And to be honest, I mean, as a foreigner, I'm a Taiwanese. My founders are Japanese. We saw that the talents here in Malaysia are actually very good. So you know, tax incentive plus the talents perspective, we think, you know, it's a really good hub for us to run the business, investment business. Since even we're sitting in Kuala Lumpur, we're sitting in Lab 1, we can still have a global investment in, you know, Singapore, Indonesia. Now we're actually just closing deals with most of the fund managers in those regions.
All right, let's talk a little bit more in terms of the business model of B Alternatives.
Sure.
We understand PE fund, how it works. We also understand VC funds, how it works. But where do you come in the scope of private investments, particularly in terms of trying to improve the liquidity situation of VCs right
now? Exactly, yeah. So I think we all know that private equity, it's a 10 years game. It's a long-term game. So when GP decide to just launch a fund, when LP decide to make a solid commitment to the fund, then they have to work very closely for 10 years or even longer. But what we can provide is that, okay, what if one side of the players, they need liquidity. So especially for LPs, you know, if they have different plans, they want to do new investment, what is the way for them to liquidate their LP interests? So for this, we call ourselves a solution, liquidity solution provider. We replace the LP by buying out their LP interests. We pay them money, so they can have the, they can use a new fresh capital to do new investment back to the ecosystem. And even we can also support the GP. We can you know, generate some liquidity solutions, structured solutions for the GP, indirectly providing to all the existing LPs in the fund. So in this area, we call it LP-led and GP-led. I think it's just a new word here, probably. LP-led means LP will initiate all the transaction. LP will involved in you know, the transferring of LP interest from the existing LP to us. And the GP-led is, you know, we're talking with most of the active, you know, fund managers in the market. We're helping the GP to you know, bring up some structured solutions to all the existing LPs, whether they can choose to roll over to the new fund, where the GP can, you know, partially sell some of the portfolios and generate the liquidity. Boost up the DPI, I would say.
So does this mean that you would have the same terms that the LP has in the initial investment? Carry interest, many other terms that are required, the same terms are now transferred to you?
Oh, that's a very good question. So I think, for LP led, you know, simply we're just replacing the existing LP. So we're joining as a new LP, but take over all the obligation the existing LP has. So then no fund terms will be changing. That's for LP side. But for GP led, usually we're going to just bring, we'll establish a new fund. We call it a continuation fund. So okay. There's a lot of terms like that. But
that's fine. I'm following.
Yeah. So when we establish a new continuation fund, all the terms can be renegotiated. So we can have, you know, lower management fee, higher carry interest rate. It just depends on what is the demand from the GP side and whether we can really bring the terms to convince all the existing LPs to roll over or to cash out. Yeah, so after it's just a balancing.
All right. Because of these new structures that are in place, what has been the interest in terms of LP-led or GP-led? Do you feel that there are, a growth area in this sense for LPs to free up their liquidity and choose for this option when essentially they are already committed to that particular fund? Because most of the funds I know of are closed funds,
yeah.
10 years, 7 years, you name it. Why the sudden, I guess, change of heart and this whole idea of trying to exit before the fund is terminated or reaches that tenure?
Yeah, I think I want to give you an example. So we've seen a research in 2022 in South Asia, especially in South Asia, the unrealized private equity asset is somewhere around 36 billion. Even we look at the mature asset, mature fund, which has vintage between 2013 to 2018, which means 5 to 10 years ago from now,
yep.
It's still 22 billion. So, but guess how much exit has been generated by secondary transaction? It's only 400 million. So it's like 1.something%. So comparing with a lot of US market or European countries, the average percentage there is always about, I think, 3 to 5%. So you can see that people start to realize, okay, we need to leverage the power of secondaries. It's not just a niche the strategy. It's not a niche asset class in the market. We're actually contributing. We're actually helping people to, just like you say, free up the capital, help them to recycle it. But then, while comparing with a lot of countries overseas, I'll say still there is a lot of gap that we need to recover. So this is something that we want to just, you know, try to promote and also just share this concept.
So have you spoken with folks like MavCap or MDEC or any other folks in here, say for instance Meranti? Do you feel that these players are actually quite crucial in order for you to build your business here?
I think so, yeah. So back to your questions, I think just actually last month in June 2023, we actually had a learning session managed by with MDEC. So we have invited many GPs and LPs. We have our, you know, investment members to share what is secondary, what is the actual structure that we can bring to the LPs or to bring to the GPs, how we can benefit each other. So there was a learning session last month. And also, I think early this year, we have an event. We have more than 100 attendees, and we also have a panel. I was the moderator. We appreciate that we have MavCap, we have 500 Global, we have Cope, EPF, and also FinCapital to be my guest. So we have a quite interesting panel discussion there to share what is the inside of the Southeast Asia market, and also sharing, you know, how we can work together closely to generate more liquidity to not only the GP side but also the LP, since, you know, EPF and MavCap also joining. So that event, I'll say, was very successful because
would you want somebody like EPF or MavCap be one of your LPs?
Well, hopefully if they can. Yeah, so far I have to say that in the past decade, since, you know, we're a carve out from a Japanese private equity firm, in the past decade we're well trusted by Asian investors, especially Japanese LPs. They were corporate pensions, they were endowments.
I was about to ask you the profile of your LPs, but go ahead.
I don't believe I can just disclose their name.
Yeah, but the types.
Yeah. The types, they were corporate pensions. They are endowments, mainly in Japan. So that's why I think Well, we cannot deny that, you know, people will think private equity investment is a high risk, high return investment, but we cannot 100% deny it. But what we are actually providing to our LP is a middle risk, stable return investment. So that's why we're thinking that, okay, whether this could be a new synergy for, you know, local pension or endowments in Southeast Asia, especially in Malaysia, to have a consideration. I can give you an example. So I'm not allowed to, you know, disclose our performance numbers, but I'll say now we're deploying our fund 6. But for our fund 5, which was 2019 vintage,
it's 4 years?
Yes, it's only just 4 years, but we have already distributed back around 100% of their investment principal.
So basically capital return guaranteed already?
Yeah, exactly. So the DPI is already around 1x. And then there is still another 1x RBPI, so it means the book asset still could be grown in the remaining fund life. So, you know, why we can do that? I mean, usually we've been asked by potential LPs why we can achieve that. I'll say, since, you know, secondary investment is we make an investment to the investing target when we already have high visibility of the asset, when the asset already became mature. So the interesting point for this investment is that, okay, basically we have very minimal J curve, and then we have very high visibility of the portfolio level. So then we can provide, we can have a more stable returns, and also I'll say quick distribution to the LPs, because we don't have to wait 10 years. We make the investment when the fund already became mature. Yeah.
How are you providing this kind of investment, secondaries, and say for instance traditional PE funds or asset management companies, what would be some of the advantages that you bring to the table that traditional asset managers and PE players are not providing right now?
I think so this is the most interesting part, that, you know, how secondary players play our own role in the ecosystem. I think buyout, they have their, you know, special points. So what we can do, especially from LP perspective or from asset management company perspective, we're trying to, we can help to mitigate the J curve. Since our distribution is faster, we have a minimal J curve, that they make investment to us. In the first, second year, they start to receive the distribution. When they make investment to the buyout fund, or especially venture capital, you know, we all know that for the first 3-5 years, well, it's not easy for you to expect any distribution,
No. Right?
So, but I would say eventually, we don't know, because for a VC fund, the eventual TVPR, or say the MOIC, the multiple, yeah, is even probably higher than secondaries. But we're providing different profile.
But the MOIC right now, Malaysia VC is expecting around 3.0 to 5.0. Is this the kind of numbers that you are working on?
Well, I'll say we're talking with most of the fund managers in the market. Well, they do have quite high TVPI, but I think at the same time, when we can expect the exit to be happen. So what if the GP, they have a certain, you know, restriction on the fund life? They have to make distribution right now.
Yes.
Where they are also, you know, we heard that some of the GP already facing some pressure from the LP side, that
yes,
they have to generate more distribution,
yes,
or they cannot have enough budget to re-up to,
yes,
the next fund. So this is somewhere that we're actually just working the GP on. It's not about the multiple, and I'm not saying that most of the valuation in the market is inflated, but we have to be very selective. We have to really talk with the GP to see what is their demands and how can we support.
Do you feel that now GP has another weapon in their arsenal when dealing with their LPs or prospecting LPs, on top of the regular pitch that they have in terms of the fund life, in terms of the track record, the moat that they have, the DPR, many of the matrices, they now have one more that says that there is a possibility for LPs to exit through our liquidation process because secondaries like BAlt is here already in Malaysia?
Yeah, we do believe that. And we believe that this is somewhere that we can contribute to the ecosystem. So back to your point, I think GP is now some of the GPs now coming back to the market, they have to raise their funds. But then, okay, the TVPI is high, the multiple looks high, but where is the DPI? Some of our LPs are asking, where is the DPI? But when we try to stand in GP's shoes, right, we understand that they're not, if they really want to partially sell out some of the peripherals, probably they can do that. But just the market now is not as sustainable or as bullish as before. So why they have to take the risk to exit peripheral now when the valuation is not really reasonable?
Yeah.
So what we can do is, okay, so back to the GP net, which I just mentioned before, we can bring another a continuation fund to accommodate some old assets. So the GP can move some of the shares to the new continuation fund, and that fund still managed by the same GP. And then we as a new sponsor, we top up cash, and GP can, so it's a legal, I would say, selling process. The cash will eventually come back to the existing fund. So the GP can use the funds to make distribution to the LPs. And some of the LPs, if don't agree with the pricing, with the valuation which we acquired, they still have the right to roll over. So it's just a fair process for LP to choose and for the GP to generate more DPI, to have a better, well, I'll say a stronger track record to convince existing or new LPs, and also helping them to boost up the budget as well.
So right now, this is Fund 6, if I'm not mistaken, okay? Has the fund size been growing in terms of AUM when it comes to the first five funds? I think the first few funds have closed already, is it?
So our first, we started this investment strategy fund, Fund 3 actually. At the moment, the fund size is just 30 million US dollar, and we start from Japan. Now, to Fund 5 and Fund 6, we're somewhere around 100, 150. The previous one was 150. This one, we're still, you know, in the market, but now we have raised about 100 million US dollars. And I believe that still now, especially when the market is not so stable, we have inbound interest, you know, asking us, you know, when we're gonna close the fund and what is our investment strategy and wanna see our pipelines. So yeah, we're appreciated. And to be honest, like most of our LPs, mainly corporate pensions and endowments, they just keep re-upping to our funds. They have strong belief in our performance and the strategy that we're taking.
All right, right now, there are two areas I wanna ask. First of all is sector interest. Are you sector agnostic? The second is, of course, founders. Are you founders agnostic as well?
Yeah, so I'll say for the industry, we don't have any restriction, but just we're telling our LPs that we don't do real estate and infrastructure and also hedge fund, including cryptos. So because we believe that that's the area that we're not so familiar.
Okay.
In the past 10 years, I think our portfolio is like half in buyout area, another half in venture, including growth. Yeah, so this is, I believe we'll just keep the similar strategy.
Why not these areas? Why not hedge funds? Why not real estate and the likes?
Well, I think, from our background, we all from buyout and VC area. We don't have the expertise. I mean, to be honest, like we're not professional doing, even we see, sometimes we see a very, I'll say, deep discount deals coming from especially Greater China area, real estate transaction. But we don't believe that we can do a deep due diligence on the quality of the asset. So we decided to pass. I mean, this is something that we commit to our LPs.
And do you feel that some sectors are a little bit more preferred over others? I mean, those are the no-go areas, but the ones that you're looking at, is it biotech? Is it medtech? Is it something else? Is it agritech?
Well, I'll say naturally, since we're having more focus in Southeast Asia, so I'll say more consumer-focused startups or, you know, growth stage companies are coming. More GP are focusing on that area, and we're talking with most of them. But just, I'm not saying that. This is, I would say, just naturally we have a lot of pipelines like that, but doesn't mean that we have to put a main focus on that. We still be very selective to the qualities of the GP and also the quality of the, I mean, indirect portfolios. We're, you know, PE fund, we have limited dry powders. We have to be very selective. We want to choose the best quality, especially when now the market is, you know, not as bullish as before. I think this is something that we're focusing on.
And moving on to the founders or portfolios that you have, do you look at the portfolios more than the numbers, the dynamics of the team, the person, the founder itself? What would be some of the considerations when you look into the particular portfolio that you want to look at?
For this, I'll say we do look at the business model, whether it's, I think it's, for this part, it's probably a bit similar to other VC funds. We have to look at the profile of the founders, the whole teams, and what is the business model looks like, and also whether they're still cash burning. If they're burning, then what is the burn rate? I think this for this part is more similar to the other VC funds. But what we can do more is to ask the GP or even ask the company how they're thinking, what's their take of the exit. Since for us, we're financial sponsors. We're not just taking chance that, okay, in 5, 10 years, they probably have an exit. We have to ask, what is your real plan? So we have to ask them to provide some information and help us to stretch our price. So if we don't have a confidence, doesn't mean that we're saying no to the portfolios, but I would say the pricing will be different because we're like, secondhand dealer. You can imagine that. So I would say this is all just a balancing. If we can have a strong confidence in the portfolios, we know that, we know that we can probably foresee an exit, and whether it's IPO or chase out, in 2-3 years, then it could boost up our IRR. So then we can have a better acquisition price. So I think it's just a balancing for our
side. And of course, out of curiosity, this is my own personal curiosity here. How long does it take from prospect to deal closing, the pipeline timeline that we have? Is it longer or shorter than most PE firms?
I'll say it really depends. For LP-led transaction, right? So, since it's just a quite simple LP interest transferring. So basically it will take 1-2 months. From we receiving the quarterly annual report to do the due diligence, talking with the GP, and the GP waiting to give us more information and give us approval. So it will usually just take 1-2 months. Until we pay the money, closing deal. But for GP-led transaction, imagine this is a really complicated process. The GP start to have this thinking, and we bring out some ideas. We have to establish a new fund, and we have to share some concept with the GP, and GP needs to bring the concept to convince the LPs. Because when the LP decline that, basically...
Game over.
Game over. So it's, I would say the most time-consuming part is actually talking with the LPs.
Yeah.
Because the fund is actually sponsored by the LPs, not the GP. GP has the obligation to do something, but they have to get approval from the LPs. They have to convince them, especially LPAC, advisory board members.
Yeah.
So whether it makes sense to run a GP there right now, or whether this valuation provided by Beer Attendance is reasonable.
Is it when we talk to the LPACs right now, do you feel that when they reject, is it because of lack of information, not clear in terms of the pitch, or there is no viability in terms of the product itself or the buyout?
I would say many cases. It could be some valuation issues. They believe that our asset could be sold at even higher pricing. It could be, it's just, because we have to convince the LPs, this structure works. And some of the LPs, from our experience, especially for corporate or government-linked LPs, they cannot roll over.
Yeah.
They have their internal rules. Like they understand that if they don't believe the pricing, if they don't agree with the pricing, usually we provide an LP to roll over. But what if they don't? They don't have the, what if their internal rules don't allow them to roll over? So they might say, no, why we have to run this? If they really need the liquidity, the LP might say, okay, then why not we just sell our LP to be the LP-led rather than GP-led? So the GP can also have such options providing to LPs. Yeah, this is something that also workable.
So we're right now attending the Social Wellbeing Conference. There are a lot of talks in terms of changing of demographies for Malaysia and Asia, protection, social welfare protection for society right now. These are the, I guess, growing trends when we talk about the landscape of how countries are, particularly in Southeast Asia. Do you feel that this kind of area requires more capital funding to help founders assist governments in their policies on delivering better social protection and social well-being for their people?
Yeah, I do believe that. Since, as I mentioned, we're most of our LPs, they're actually corporate pensions in Japan. We're helping them to, you know, generate even higher return, stable returns and stable cash flow to the pensions. You know, for most of pensions, they're not making investment into us for a certain business synergy, no, or they want to know more about Southeast Asia. They're not doing that.
Yeah.
They just want pure return. So what we can provide is, as a secondary buyers, we're doing that then. So, I mean, back to your questions in Southeast Asia, I think if more and more people understand what we can provide, we're not the marketing players. We're like, you know, we're trying to just help LPGP to provide liquidity. At the same time, we can also make stable return with less J-curve, with, you know, less risk. We'll say this is our obligation. And we believe that we can be part of the ecosystem to trying to help the whole ecosystem recycle the capital. And then I think from LP perspective, right, if we can just pay back the cash, they have the cash to boost up the whole ecosystem, because they have the fresh capital to maybe invest into new area, new industry, or, you know, they can bring out some new business in Malaysia. And from GP side, I think even we just look at the startups level, if they can generate more distribution, or if they can, you know, partially sell some of the portfolios and they take back cash, they have cash to do follow-on investment on the portfolio they already make the investment. They can keep supporting them back into the later stage. A lot of people now in Southeast Asia are talking about the funding gap. This is somewhere we believe that we can support.
Definitely. In fact, based on the conversations that I've had with MavCap, for instance, the funding gap is actually quite critical when it comes to, say, for instance, Series B.
Yeah.
Not so much Series A, not so much pre-seed.
Yeah.
But, you know, you need capital for that. So if you come into the picture to solve that particular problem, then I'm sure you're welcomed, more than welcomed in this landscape.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot more that needs to be unpacked. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have. That was Yulin Chan, the founding partner, or the managing partner of Malaysia B Alternatives here in Kuala Lumpur. Learn more about them at B Alternatives. Just search for their website there. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.